Well, good evening and welcome in to this very special Facebook Live. I say special because we're closing in on it, folks. We're inside 1 month now. We officially hit the 1 month mark. We've been introducing you to all the candidates here in Pennsylvania running for governor. And tonight we're glad to be joined by an old friend of the show. He's joined us a number of times over the last few years. He's Senator Doug Mastriano. And Senator, it's a real pleasure to talk with you tonight. Thanks for joining us. Hi.
Like a walk down memory lane, we've been off and on your show for the past 2 years during the shutdown and the voting integrity stuff we were trying to do. And thanks for having me back on. And thanks for being a reason in the Philadelphia area.
Well, I appreciate that. A lot of people, and of course, tonight is all about folks that are tuning in. I've asked people, and I hope that tonight, if people are tuned in, that they will be receptive to any questions that they may have for you. Tonight's the night to ask. I get lots of emails and people that will comment after a visit, and they'll say, why didn't you ask this, or you should ask that? Tonight's the night people can come in and ask you anything they'd like. So if you've got a question for Senator Mastriano, fire away. We'll throw it up here on the bottom of the screen, and I'll ask it. In the meantime, Senator, let's kick things off tonight with the race, the 30,000-foot view. As we're inside of 1 month, polls seem to suggest, at least the ones I've seen, that you're leading this, but there's a huge chunk of voters that have identified themselves as undecided. So what do you make of that?
Well, I've been mostly ahead in the polls since last May, actually, and I know there are a couple have come out that said otherwise, but generally, you know, polls, even a Democrat Legislative Campaign Committee did a poll, and they had me ahead back in November. You know, but in the end, Chris, you know the deal. Nothing matters until election day. So I'm racing as if I'm behind. And you're right. Some polls have about almost half of the potential voters non-committal, some around 40. Trafalgar's post, which is one of the most reliable and most reputable polls, Trafalgar, they said 20%, which is still enough to flip the election massively. So I got a lot of work to do out there, and I'm going to finish strong to the end.
Is it surprising to you that there is, even at 20, I mean, depending on the polls, whether you call it 20, whether you call it 40, is it surprising to you that there are so many that still have no idea how they might vote this close to election day?
Chris, I'd be surprised if it was 40. When I see that massive gap of, you know, unconfirmed voters, you know, uncertain, I have trouble getting my mind around it. But 20 sounds about right. About this time, people start paying attention to the elections, you know, because they have life. They have their lives back with most of the shutdown, except in Philadelphia being lifted. So I think the next 3 weeks, obviously, are going to be extremely critical to seal the deal.
May I ask you about something unrelated to your race? It's unrelated to the governor's race altogether. And I'm just curious, have you been asked to talk at all about the United States Senate race that's going on simultaneously? I know you have your own race, and I know it's an entirely different race when we're talking about the United States Congress versus the governor of the Commonwealth. But do you have any opinion or impression of the way that's going and President Trump weighing in on Dr. Oz?
Yeah, I was a bit surprised about that. Obviously, I support Kathy Barnett. I've known Kathy, you know, well before this race here. I had her as my premier speaker at the Heartbeat Bill when I introduced that legislation about 3 years ago. That's kind of interesting. We invited her because we knew her from Fox News and being, you know, a leading voice of the Republican Party, you know, towards the eastern part of Pennsylvania. Had no idea that her life story was really so pro-life, you know, conceived in rape when her mom was 11 years old, and the family got together and said, let's not punish this dear little one. And that's Kathy's story. And so she shared it in Harrisburg in the press room, and the media was riveted. And they gave us such fair coverage because Kathy shared a very personal story of, look, you know, I'm one of the exceptions. I'm the one, you know, rape and incest and health of the mother. I'm two of the three exceptions that you have for abortion, and doesn't my life matter? So I'm fully in on Kathy. I was surprised the president came in on Dr. Oz because there's a lot of tape out there of him saying things that are not in alignment with conservative values or Trump values for that matter.
If President Trump were to endorse you in this race, he is not endorsed, as we've talked tonight anyway. Maybe when people watch this later, he may. But as of now, he is not. And should he endorse you, would that surprise you? Or do you look at it as separate? He has his reasons for endorsing Oz. And then if he were to turn around and endorse you, how would one interpret that?
Yeah, obviously, I'd be elated because, you know, we have been on the forefront trying to find out what happened in 2020 and still endeavoring in the capacity I have as a senator. Getting an endorsement from somebody I respect so much, you know, although I might disagree with him on that one here. People disagree with me on many issues as well, you know, and still choose to vote for me. So that's not something I can't get beyond.
So if you have questions tonight for Senator, please keep them coming. We'll jump right in with one. I have a couple of my own, but let's go with Mary's right away, which is, how soon would you remove the COVID mandates? And does that include nursing facilities if you're the next governor of the Commonwealth?
Thank you, Mary. And on day one, all mandates are gone. On day one, all the jab for job requirements are gone. We will put the information out there we have, and the homes, facility, and businesses will decide how best to implement those. Chris, when we talked during the shutdown, you know, 2 years ago this month, you know, about this time 2 years ago, you had me on after we had that first big rally around 7,000 people showed up. We saw how ridiculous it was. We're told to follow the science, but yet these edicts weren't making scientific, you know, when you leave your house, for instance, put a mask on. Okay. When you're alone in your car, have a mask on. When you're in the lobby of the restaurant, have a mask on. But when you sit down and have food in front of you, you're good to go. I mean, none of it made sense. And the worst part for me, Chris, was what happened in the elder care facilities. And that's why I came out, I think it was April of 2 years ago, was the first to call for Levine's resignation. I watched this plague where they took the sick from the hospitals and put them into the homes, which was the most vulnerable. The CDC actually said that back then, got it right. And at least 16,000, in my estimation, dear loved ones died, oftentimes alone because of these failed policies of Levine. And, you know, if this is a Republican administration, Chris, you and I know they'd be held to pay, breathless reporting. But instead of being punished or held accountable, Levine is promoted to admiral, is the second most senior health official in America now, and it just, and woman of the year now too. I mean, seriously, follow the science, Bean.
You know, you steered into something. I don't know that I was even going to get to this tonight, but I may as well while we're here. This has come up in several states. I don't know, 15, 16 states or so. Some governors have punted on it. Some have signed into law a ban on biological males competing against women. Could a Governor Mastriano administration do something similar?
If the legislation is ready for me on day one, I'm signing it. But if not, I'll do an executive order to ban biological males from going into female sports. If you look at the history of female sports, it was a long ride. We really take for granted that females have so much opportunity now. 20, 30 years ago, it was not so. The money was weighted heavily towards men's sport and what have you. And now we have where women's sport is at its pinnacle in history. And now we're going to follow the science, biological males, and, you know, they can take chemical-suppressing, hormone-suppressing devices. It cannot change their body size or muscle size, their hearts, the size of their heart or lungs. And, you know, we watched some of these videos. We saw, you know, Lila Thomas, you know, first ranked about 500th, you know, in the men's competition, ranked number one for females. Okay. And there she is, you know, this giant guy next to these, you know, strong females, but about half his size. And it's just so wrong. I'm all about following the science. You know, the left preached to us, Chris, for 2 years. They're still doing it in Philadelphia. Now, follow the science. Okay, let's do that. Every cell in our bodies has X or Y chromosome, which determines our gender.
Senator Doug Mastriano with us, as you can see. And if you have a question, you jump right on in and ask him anything you want. That's called a reset in the radio business, but I don't have to do that with video. I forget. Lisa says, what are your thoughts? See, old habits die hard, Doug. What are your thoughts on Biden's massive partisan infrastructure bill? Lisa wants to know, Senator.
Yeah, thank you, Lisa. I think it's a giant waste of money. It's a giant pork barrel project. We saw with his, you know, massive Build Back Better, and we haven't built anything, you know, and nothing's better. And it's driven up inflation, and the lack of our own production of energy resources have driven up the cost of living by 30%. There are people in our state that are having trouble make ends meet because, according to the latest statistics that I saw, to live at the same standard of living that you had last year because of gas prices and inflation requires an additional $5,000 average per person. That's a lot of money. And especially we're seeing a lot of our tax breaks that Donald Trump brought in are being rolled back. So as far as that package, any kind of overspending package like this from the federal government, and we even saw it, you know, during Donald Trump as well, there's a lot of waste in there. We see where congressmen and women and senators, you know, they get their little pet projects in there. And there really needs to be a line item veto, I think, for presidents in the future.
Rachel wants to know, Doug, what is your plan with schools? How do you feel about the issue of school choice?
Thank you, Rachel. That's a really important question in Pennsylvania. And I don't think I ever actually addressed this topic in our 2 years of off and on talking on the radio.
No, I don't think we ever have. You're right.
I'm a member of the Education Committee. And so I've been researching this a bit. And Pennsylvania, according to the latest NEA report, National Education Association report that I get my hands on is 2020. They say that we spent in 2020, $30 billion in Pennsylvania. That's all sources, not just taxpayer dollars, but also federal money and other state money that was funneled into it. $30 billion, 12th most expensive state in the nation, producing in 2020, before the COVID shutdown, the 28th quality student. And Tom Wolf, in his budget proposal just a month and a half ago, wants to add another $1.3 billion on top of that. I ask parents, Chris, as I travel around Pennsylvania, I'm like, are you getting your bang for your buck? Are you getting a university-level education with room and board? Of course you're not. And then some people ask, well, why do teachers, and the teachers aren't the villains in the story here. There's a lot of fantastic teachers. Some teachers, they have to go out and buy $1,000 or $2,000 worth of supplies to get through the year. And so where's that money going? $19,000 per student. Only a third of that physically makes it to the classroom. And so that's why we see teachers and students struggling with quality textbooks and what have you. So what I'm going to do with that education, and Chris, I'm no Dolly daydreamer. You know, I'm a realist. I live in Realville, as Rush used to say.
Yes.
The mayor of Realville was
done. That's right.
Rush, the great one. He sure is missed. My idea is it's going to take the unions are going to come at me hard, too, for this year, but school choice. And if we get school choice right, the money should go with the kids and not with the system. And I'm not talking about the complete $19,000. I think if we give a sum of money, we'll have to figure that out, maybe $9,000 or $10,000 per student. But then that becomes sort of a scholarship or a fund where the parents, and this is extremely popular. Some people say, well, what about your electability in Philadelphia? I'm like, well, 80% of Philadelphia, actually it's 88% of Philadelphia agrees with me on school choice. They want to have the money and they want to get their kids out of rotten schools, you know, full of crime and gangs, what have you, and the parents want to send their kids to a school of their choice. It might be a private school, might be a school on the other side of town, but you know, might be cyber school or homeschool. But the money goes to the kids. And when that happens, Chris, I think this is the way we can actually attack in some way property tax, because property, the main culprit in property tax, if you own land slash a house or a house, you're paying rent every year to the government in Harrisburg. And so you're never really a full owner of it. And in my research, when I was a committee chair, I found that about 10,000 homes a year in Pennsylvania are lost, mostly from the elderly, for failure of keeping up on property taxes. And Chris, for me, that's just immoral. You have people in their golden years that raise their families, pay their tax dollars. You know, some of them World War II veterans, Vietnam veterans, what have you. And in their golden years, they find themselves, you know, out on the street. And, you know, their house being sold at a sheriff's sale for, you know, pennies on the dollar. And that's because of property taxes. They're on a fixed income. My own wife's grandma had to choose between medicine and food, or medicine and paying, you know, the property tax. And she died, we believe, prematurely from that. And so I do believe, Chris, if we're able to find school choice, it's going to bring down the cost by billions of dollars, perhaps. And as a result, that will help drive down the cost of property tax. So, you know, in the end, I want to get rid of property tax. I want to do this in a way, though, that's a bit different from 76. I support 76, but all it did is shift it from landowners to your income tax and the sales tax. And so just going to spike a price. I think we need to do better as far as being a better stewards with the money we have coming in, rather than just shifting taxes around.
This pivots quickly, and then I'll get to some more questions here, folks. You brought up something about taxes and people's taxes in this state. One of the things that, you know, states like Alaska do, because they have such an abundance of natural resources under their earth in petroleum. Now, granted, there's a lot fewer Alaskans than there are Pennsylvanians. I recognize that. But someone actually said to me, aren't we sitting on enough natural gas that maybe Pennsylvania could look at something economically creative like Alaska and even see in the form of a check or a rebate or a tax reduction for Pennsylvanians if we tap into our full potential with energy? What do you think of something like that?
You're absolutely right. We're literally sitting on a gold mine. I read some scientific studies on the natural gas potential that's untapped, and they say this will last for centuries in Pennsylvania alone. I mean, that's incredible. We're overall total energy producer, third in the nation. We're number two overall in production of liquefied natural gas, and number three overall for coal. That's a powerhouse, and I agree with your friend there. We get no benefit from it. We used to have a 100-gallon propane tank outside our house here, and there was a couple of reasons why we got rid of it. But one of them, as you know, the guy comes every month or so, you know, over the wintertime to fill it up, and I'd see the bill, and I'm like, we're a producer in Pennsylvania, and it's costing me this much for 100 gallons. Are you kidding me? And I did some research on this as a senator before I was running for governor, And I was asking the question, you know, why is energy produced domestically, locally, you know, in our backyard costing so much? Well, you know, come to find out, Governor Wolf would try to find a way to put a fee or a tax. The tax would have to be approved by the General Assembly. So he'd have fees come in, and that would increase the cost. And then, of course, the money from these fees would mostly go to fund and some major projects in Philadelphia. But then this is making Pennsylvania more expensive to produce liquefied natural gas and to deal with coal. And as a result of that, many of these companies this year are shutting down and going to West Virginia and Ohio. And this is killing us here. And I agree, if we do this right, if so on day one, I'm planning on stripping away some of these regulations that Tom Wolf put on top of the company, in addition to some of these fees, you know, the companies, the gas and coal industry. And I want to unleash the potential of energy in Pennsylvania, because if you know, what's a so what? How does the average citizen benefit? Perhaps they'll get a check every year, but for sure, I want to have energy costs really cheap in Pennsylvania, where you can live here and not have to decide whether you're going to feed your family or heat your house or cool your home in the summertime. Or this is a place to go to build your businesses, because it's darn cheap because of our production of energy, you know, domestically in the state here, where you could afford to be here. But instead, because of these taxes, we're really expensive. And I was in the Southwest last month, southwestern part of the state there, and I had one of the coal guys there with me, and there's plants, energy plants all around. There's several in this one area. And he goes, "Yep, that one's closing this year, and that one's closing next year." And I'm like, "Well, can you tell me what's going on?" It's because of Harrisburg. And so it's far worse than that. Governor Wolf unilaterally entered Pennsylvania into the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative called REGI, RGDI, Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative. So we'll be the 12th state, basically from Virginia all the way up to Maine. And it's a state version of the Paris Climate Accords, which it's a cap and trade, which we have to pay for credits then for CO2 emissions. According to a report I saw from the governor's office, I saw the numbers change a bit, but the first report I saw from the governor's office said it was this year, without a vote in the General Assembly, is going to cost us in energy increases $461 million more and $2 billion, according to a Senate study, over the next 2 years. And you think things are bad right now. That's why on day one, there's a lot of things I'm going to do on day one. You know, I'm watching Ron DeSantis. I'm watching Youngkin. I'm like, yeah, that's a great idea. Here's one for Pennsylvania, though, because we're an energy producer, unlike Virginia and Florida. On day one, I'm going to be striking down REGI. We're going to be out of it.
You see yourself governing like that? You say you watch DeSantis. You're paying attention to that guy. Do you see yourself governing in that vein?
Yeah, I like to stay on the campaign trail. You like, you know, Ron DeSantis, I'm going to make him look like an amateur. And I love
him. To your questions, Lisa wants to know, why are you for legislation that would end the independence of the lieutenant governor candidacy, i.e. make it a pick of the governor? So I guess that it, and I haven't heard your position on this, so this is news to me. Lisa, thanks for the question. Is that in fact true? You would prefer to pick your lieutenant governor as opposed to them running separate from you?
So there's two votes. So I'm on state committee. The first vote, I was a yes. And then, so let me explain how this happens here. So a memo is introduced, and, you know, I'm Doug, Senator Mastriano, and I plan on introducing legislation on, you know, voting reform, you know, voter ID. And then after a few weeks, senators sign up to co-sponsor it. Then it's shut down, and then the actual law comes out. And sometimes you look at the law and you're like, that's not what I want to support. And so in the state committee, I was an affirmative on it. But when it came to the floor of the Senate, I was looking at the legislation, and I changed my mind on it. It said in there that the state party would have, like, the ultimate last say of who a governor's lieutenant governor candidate would be. And I'm watching, Chris, with some chagrin, the insider politics going on in Pennsylvania. I'm like, that's a terrible idea. This empowers the state party more than it actually does the gubernatorial candidate, where they'd have a state committee vote to approve, you know, my pick. And so as a result of that, I was a resounding no on that when it passed through the Senate. If I could add something to this here. So
you are not for that then. That is incorrect. You are not for legislation that would end the independence of the lieutenant governor candidacy.
After I saw the actual language, and that's why I explained, you know, I guess too much of making sausage there. You know, legislation is introduced, and it's sometimes later that we actually see the, and sometimes the language doesn't match up with the spirit of the memo. And you can withdraw your support anytime before, you know, even during a vote. So I was a no on that because it put a lot of power, you know, from what I read, into the hands of the, you know, the state party. And this is why it's really important for people to stay engaged with their senator and reps, because we'll get legislation, you know, say in state committee, which handles voting integrity, this issue of lieutenant governor. And in committee, we might be yeses on it. And some of you will be reading legislation, or, you know, you'll find something out and contact me and say, hey, Doug, that's a terrible idea. Here's what this means for us down here, you know, at the street level, what have you. And there's been several instances where my vote was flipped based off of constituents coming to me, you know, giving me more information than I didn't have access to. Does that make sense?
Oh, sure. No, it does. And I guess that brings me to my next question, because you and I have talked about this before. It's the 800-pound gorilla issue in the room. It is the issue that quite literally ads have been running over and over and over on my radio station. About you as it relates to Act 77. It is probably, it is the legislation that I'm asked about, that we hear about, that we talk about, election integrity and Act 77 more than any other. And I've asked you about this before. You have told me you regret your vote on Act 77.
Oh, I never said.
You didn't say you regret it.
I didn't, no.
Okay, well, I apologize. I don't mean to put words in your mouth. I thought you said you regret that you voted. So you do not regret voting for Act 77.
I don't remember telling you that here. But what I do know is what was implemented in 2020 was not what any Republican voted on. And I know it's convenient for people running these ads here to say certain things. One of the guys running ads, actually, in his pitiful letter to Donald Trump, he actually explained it the way I do. He said, a voting reform package was voted on before COVID, and the Democrats used COVID to hijack decent legislation and turn it into something that was never intended. And of course, their explanation changes when they want to get a vote. That's one thing I like about politics. People are really dishonest. They'll say anything to get a vote or to dissuade you away from somebody who's trying to do the right thing. Act 77 was a voting reform package that was voted on in the fall of 2019. And no one foresaw COVID or how the governor would change the law or how the Pennsylvania State Supreme Court would rewrite the law or how the Secretary of State would change the law as well. And it was completely hijacked. And what it was implemented in 2020 was absolutely nothing that I voted on. Let me lay out. I don't know how much detail you want me to go into. Sometimes the detail doesn't sink in with folks.
Well, may I? Can we? I don't want to rush you. Certainly, I want to let you have all the time you want to talk about the detail of it. May I just ask broadly some themes? So when it is said that Act 77, no matter what was in it or the details of it, was never a constitutionally passed piece of legislation, ergo, some have concluded everyone who voted in the affirmative for Act 77 was in violation of the Constitution, you would say what to that?
I wish they were right. I'd ask them, do they know which court made that ruling? And it was a Commonwealth court, which is 3-2 conservative. The court that changed the law and where it's appealed to is the Pennsylvania State Supreme Court. And so the Pennsylvania State Supreme Court is yet to rule on what the Commonwealth court said that's not constitutional. And will the state Supreme Court rule against itself, since they're the ones that made the changes to the law? Let me explain it this way here. What happened on the I live in a world of facts, and, you know, Colonel in the United States Army, I don't play games. I'm not perfect, but I don't play games. 17 September of 2020, the Pennsylvania State Supreme Court changed the law. They upended the law. As you can imagine, 30 years plus in the Army, 12 years out of the country, lived across the nation and around parts of the world here. I voted quite a bit and more often than not by mail. The state Supreme Court stripped off all the safeguards that were in place to protect votes coming in that way. They took away the requirement for a postal mark saying that it was mailed, you know, in a specific window of time. They took away the requirement for a signature within the ballot. I mean, this is insane. They added 3 days to receive the ballots, which and just for 2020, that would have been a felony any other year, and it would be a felony this year as well. And that was just the beginning of our horrors there. And for those who watch my fireside chats, they would see when that ruling came out and I had it in my hand and I was reading it, I said, all this here means somebody could be on a copy machine. I actually mimicked a mimeograph machine. I'm dating myself here. You know, I said someone could be literally in a copy machine. How many votes are we short? You know, 2 days after the election. And we don't know. And this is the main reason, in addition to my hearing in Gettysburg, why I still believe we need a forensic investigation of the ballots. Because the forensic investigation of ballots will tell us if indeed My assumption, I have no evidence of this right now, Chris, but my assumption that many of these ballots may have been produced on a copy machine. And I saw in Arizona, with a magnifying glass, you could see if it's hand filled in, there's actually, you know, circles of ink, and you see little ridges of ink when you zoom in, as opposed to a copy machine where it's pixelated. I mean, it's very clear. And so that's not what I voted on here. And that's why we have so many troubles. And the troubles are compounded by the Wolf administration, who allowed the curing of ballots. And when I voted by as a member of the United States Armed Forces, it was very clear on the ballots here, if they're incorrectly filled out, they'd be set aside, thrown out. That all changed, of course, in the six Democrat counties in the state here in 2020, when Kathleen Buchvard allowed on the 24th of October the curing of ballots. Literally, she allowed people to open up the ballots and make corrections so they wouldn't be thrown out. I mean, this is bizarre. And to make matters even more significantly worse, on the 1st of September of 2020, the Secretary of State Buchvard, who since resigned in shame, thankfully, she allowed outside money, Zuckbucks, to come pouring into Democrat counties. And five times more money went into Democrat counties and Republican counties. They waited until, you know, some weeks later to allow Republican counties, you know, put a bid on these outside monies, all from liberal-leaning Democrat sources like Zuckerberg and others. And what's the so what? You wondered how the Democrats, you know, in Philly and other counties were able to buy voting offices and put ballot boxes, which is also a creation by the Pennsylvania State Supreme Court. That's not in Act 77. The state Supreme Court said you could put ballot boxes out. And so these Democrat operatives were hired using Zuckerberg's money and other radical left-wing money here to hire Democrat operatives in Democrat counties, and it became a get-out-the-vote rally for Democrats. And we've been disenfranchised. Five times more money. For instance, the highest Republican county, you know, the highest county that voted for Trump in 2020, received about 59 cents per capita for voter. In Philadelphia, it's almost $3 a person. You see a problem there.
So if I could just zero in on a couple of things specifically. Number one, Act 77 is not a vote you'd take back if you had it to do all over again.
If I knew COVID and that the law would be changed by the Supreme Court, none of us would touch it. If you think about this here, and it's funny, these dishonest people running for office, they want to pin it on me. Every single Republican in the U.S. Senate was a yes on it. Every single Democrat except one was a no on it. And this confirmed a lot of what we thought on our side here. You know, I'm a conservative stalwart with Kristen Phillips Hill and with Scott Hutchinson and a few others. You know, we're routinely no on anything that we think to be compromised if we have the wits about us to see into the future. Katie Muth was a no on this here. Senator Williams in Philadelphia was a no on this. I mean, I can go down a list here of who's who. All those wannabe, you know, mini AOCs that are in our state Senate were a no on this here. Of course, now they love it. And of course, now we hate it because it was co-opted.
Who figured out how to co-opt it, do you think? Who was the genius on the left, the mad scientist who said, oh, we can use this and run with it?
Well, that's an interesting way to put it, Chris.
I mean, somebody, you guys didn't see what ultimately became the greatest weapon Pennsylvania's ever seen for Democrats in the election, right? You didn't see it as Republicans.
You know, the Democrats saying, and I think it was an Axelrod, I can't remember who says this from the Clinton campaign, but, you know, never let a good crisis go to waste. So COVID, which nobody could have foreseen, I'm not a conspiracy theorist here, but COVID came along and they exploited it. So, okay, how did they exploit it? Well, of course, the leader of this movement, I don't know if he has, you know, the know-how of this, but Tom Wolf would be the brains behind it if I had to put my finger, you know, in some regard. Obviously, people, the Supreme Court saw more and his Secretary of State saw more, you know, and she's a political operative as well, Buchvard, well, was. How does he get the money? He didn't have the money to proactively send out ballots to people who didn't even ask it. You know, Chris, I was receiving calls from people showing me, I got five, I got eight, there's only two of us in this house. What's right. Going on? Do something, Senator Mastriano. And Tom Wolf was using federal money for COVID relief here to proactively push ballots out to people that people didn't even ask for. And so I'd pin it on Tom Wolf. I know he's very disarming, you know, a kind, gentle person, very beta in person. But I do believe, you know, his name, and never has a governor been more appropriately named, you know, Tom Wolf. I mean, the guy, politically, he's sharp. Got to watch
him. And then, very specifically, you get this nomination, you run against Josh Shapiro. Here's the conventional wisdom. All right. This is not me. This is just the conventional political wisdom. They can't wait to run against Doug Mastriano because of things you just said tonight. For instance, the copying, the manufacturing of votes. They believe that's straight up quackery, kookery, and they think you are the Democrats do. I mean, no disrespect, but you know this. They think you're the biggest clown of them all, and they hope you're the nominee because they're going to run and run and run. Doug Mastriano thinks the election was stolen and copies were made and blah, blah, blah. That's their play. And so you say what?
Well, I would say that's coming from the establishment and not really from the Democrats. Some who are uninformed will actually say that. But actually, to disprove what you just said completely, the Democrat National Convention, about this time last year, working with the legislative arm of the DNC, the Democratic Legislative Campaign Committee, and this all came out in several articles, two in Political, one in the state and county. I can't remember. You could Google it and see it for yourself. Actually, they inferred in these Democrat articles here that they saw me as the greatest threat to Josh Shapiro winning. And the Inquirer, although not mentioning me by name, but dovetailing off this political piece there, looking at me and how much of a fighter I am and all I was able to accomplish in just 3 years, they said, wow, we don't think Josh Shapiro can stand up. You know, he hasn't been vetted because they protected him, just like they protected Wolf. So let me drill down here. Everything you just said, according to Democrats on the inside, and, you know, and we've encountered some of these folks here, they're terrified that I'm going to run against Josh Shapiro. So as a result, they spent six figures doing hit pieces on me last year. They coordinated with their friends in the media. And Chris, I thought it was weird that I was reading pieces, you know, in Inquirer, okay, that they're going to do that because they love Josh Shapiro. Yeah. And they're in his pocket. At least that one reporter is. But the Washington Post, Washington Times, New York Times, LA Times, Jake Tapper, the Cuomo brother at CNN, they're all saying, and MSNBC, you know, breathlessly, saying all the same things about me. You know, and then come to find out, they did a poll in November. And they're trying to see if they're orchid, and they targeted 21 Republicans. I was number one on their hit list. You can read it, political. It's on there. I was surprised how honest they were, actually, because this is like behind the scenes kind of operation here. And they said, wow, we tried to destroy Mastriano. He was number one on their hit list last year. He, in their poll in November, 2 months before I announced, I was leading, as I have been mostly since last May, for governor. And they said the negatives were in the single digits. And it was funny what they kind of said. Not only did we hit him hard and it didn't work, it made him more popular and it worked against us here. And so now the next thing here is of course, I think some of these old chests that you hear are actually from inside our party.
Chris. Well, agreed. I'll jump in and say you're 100% right. It is the Republican Party that I hear saying this an awful lot. In fact, I've heard Republicans who have said to me quietly, candidly, off the record, they have said that look, I don't know you personally well. This is not coming from me, I promise. I've just heard that there is a cabal of people that are currently candidates that have decided if it gets right down to it, they would rather join forces to see to it you don't get the nomination than allow you to go forward. I've heard it said. I'm sure you probably have too. So there's great interest in the Republican ranks to see you defeated as well. That's absolutely true. I can confirm that.
And I can as well. And it really gives me pause because, you know, I didn't have to do this job. I retired as an Army colonel with a top secret special compartmented information, you know, TSSCI clearance, had that for 30 years, an expert on strategy, very knowledgeable in Russia and operations in Eastern Northern Europe, able to conduct operations, you know, in South Asia and the Middle East, you know, PhD, 4 master's degree. Award-winning author, had a, like most colonels, I was going to ride off in a sunset. You know, only 3 in my class made it to colonel. There's no general officers in my career field. So this is the pinnacle of success in what I did in the Army. And that's all I actually ever wanted to do. And like so many colonels, had that sweet job lined off, kind of ride off into the sunset, lots of foreign travel, you know, making a lot more money than I make as a senator. But as I was taking stock of my service, you know, more than 30 years active duty, 12 years out of the country, 12 moves, 4 combat tours, I was really having a hard time realizing, Chris, that despite all the sacrifice, the country was in terrible shape. And I was on another radio show, my last interview in uniform, talking about Russia and its threat to the East. Ironically, it's happening, which we did predict in 2017 in some fashion. I was complaining off air to this young man, 23-year-old, you know, reporter. You know, I was feeling bad for myself. Please don't take this the wrong way. I'm not a hero. I served with heroes. well, you know, I did all this sacrifice, all these deployments, all 4 years away from my wife and kid, and it's for what? The country's falling apart. And this young man, Chris, looked over at me, you know, behind the microphone off air and said, well, Colonel, do something about it. And that really hit me hard.
Wow.
And so I turned down that sweet retirement job and have done this. And so I'll ask all these rhinos and establishment types that, who say they love veterans and all that. But I've noticed this trend within the Republican Party that they love us as ornaments on Veterans Day and Memorial Day, not rank and file Republicans. I'll talk about leadership, the old dinosaur types that have been around for a while. They love us on the shelf and pull us down for special events. But when we run for office here, there's great disdain. And what I'm finding out, Chris, and this is my inference, no one's actually told me this here, but it seems like there's a fear that they can't control us, that we really do honor, we endeavor to honor our oath on the Constitution and see this as a continuation of our military service where we really want to make a difference and serve the people. And that's the thing I really, knowing that though, Chris, that doesn't help the fact that I don't understand why there's a, from the old timers, why there's such disdain for military folks who want to run for office. You know, let us stand and fall on our policies rather than, you know, these personal hit ads that are based off of lies or fabrications or hyperbole.
So let me name names here, Doug, because, and I do want to get to other questions. I'm sorry, but this has been gnawing at me for a bit. We've already addressed the Act 77 thing. We've had ads running in perpetuity, hitting you, calling you Doug Malin Mastriano. We tackled that. Now let me tackle another one. It features the voice of Kellyanne Conway. We know that Kellyanne is working for your colleague in the Senate, Jake Corman. We know that you and Jake Corman are not friends, to say the least. Kellyanne is quoted in this ad, and she says it, and we've run it a lot. It says, hey, Doug, he's a talker. He's a show horse, not a workhorse. He says he's tight with Trump, but you don't have to say you're tight with Trump if you're really tight with Trump, sort of implying that you're making that up. I'm confused by it, Doug, because I don't know you well. I don't know Jake Corman well at all. I don't know Kellyanne. I don't know what's going on, so I can't. In fact, I've had Jake Corman on the show once. It went very poorly. I got very irritated because I just said, I don't understand what's going on with you and Doug. It was right after he removed you from the investigation, the audit. I said, I don't get it. Help me understand what the hell's going on. So it didn't go well. Jake was supposed to be with us last week. That got canceled because he was going to drop out. And then all of a sudden he says, Trump called him and says, stayed in. So I don't, you two in particular, I'm going to be really honest, Doug, I don't understand what's going on between you and Jake Corman. I don't know what to make of it. So help me.
Well, so I did military intelligence for most of my career. And in there, we'd get reports from people and we'd have to consider the source. The one ad that you've been running for about a year or so, you consider the source. Who's the source? It's a guy that still lives at home, hasn't served in the military or even fire department as far as now, or even Boy Scouts for the matter, but lives in mommy's basement and thinks he can move from mom's basement to the governor's house. So consider the source. In this case here, Kellyanne is a hired gun by Jake. He's spent hundreds of thousands of dollars to buy her. And you think about that. So you're spending hundreds of thousands of dollars to buy somebody that you're hoping will give you access to Trump. And clearly she will say whatever Jake tells her to say. And she's never met me. She has not been on the inside with Donald Trump, you know, for several years, thanks to her husband, I think, largely. She was not around during the voting integrity fight. She has no idea of my relationship. So anything she's saying here, obviously, she's just making it up to pay off her guy, you know, Jake Corman, that's paid her some decent, serious cash. Yeah, very disappointed in her. She's never met me. And so to say that I'm a show horse after everything I've done, Pennsylvania the past 2 years during the shutdown, you know, being one of the lone voices fighting for the state to reopen, you know, fighting to get Levine held accountable, fighting for voting integrity, taking the shots, you know, standing alone oftentimes with just a handful of other members of the General Assembly here, trying to get accountability in our state open, our schools open, the elder care facilities, you know, on and on and on. She knows nothing about Pennsylvania politics. She needs to go back to New Jersey and cool her heels. So consider the source. And so that she's not a credible source. She knows nothing about Pennsylvania.
Let me ask you about, and I know you'd be loath to be complimentary of the guy at all, but here's the one thing that gives me pause on Jake Corman, and that is, unless I'm mistaken, he did or did not, I think the answer is yes, he did, write to Congress, write to the vice president ahead of January 6th and say, whoa, stop, don't certify this election, we have a problem. Is that true or false? Are you willing to give him that or not true?
That's as a result of us, a handful of us here doing several letters before that and, you know, pointing out to the fact of voting fraud. That's as a result of my Gettysburg hearing and the findings, because he went from "I'm not aware of any fraud, move on the Friday after election, you know, to pivoting 2 months later because the immense amount of pressure from the constituents. You know, when people would join my live, they'd be like, "Doug, how do we, you know, get this we didn't call it forensic investigation back then. That's a term coined from Arizona last June or last spring. But, you know, how do we get an investigation?" And I'm like, "You got to contact Senate leadership, because right now I'm banging my head in the wall here." And so I don't know. But, you know, I did listen to your interview in the aftermath of that. That was nothing I asked for between Jake and I on the 25th of August of last year. I listened to your interview and I was taking myself out, which is kind of hard. But watching that interview, I do salute you, because you did call Jake out. You said, the thing that stood out to me, you said, "It sounds like to me you have more resolve and you're harder on Doug than you've ever been on Tom Wolf." And that's exactly the problem I have with what happened there, because he's never called Tom Wolf out on any of these issues.
Yeah, I have a sincere problem with that more than anything else. Is he seems more aggressive with you and any fellow Republican than I ever heard out of Democrats. And I look, I'll just be candid with you. I don't think he stands a prayer in this fight, frankly, at this point. I mean, polling suggests he doesn't. I don't really know why he didn't get out. I had heard politically there was some conventional wisdom that him getting out meant that he and others were going to try to consolidate just simply to help remove you. Like it is just true, Doug. This is not an editorial comment. I know it's true politically. He is one of a few Republicans that are really committed to, if it can't be us, we don't want it to be Doug. That is true. I know that's true. So I think that's kind of gross, but that's what's true.
But yet he could not bring himself to getting out and then, you know, throwing his consolidating his base of 3% that he consistently polls at, you know, to somebody that he thinks stands a better chance. Yeah. But I could bring us back a little bit here. I mean, you and I are, I guess, close to the same age. Ronald Reagan's experienced similar pushback from the establishment, much like this. They said it differently with him. Donald Trump did as well. And even Ron DeSantis did. "He's too conservative. Can he win the liberal parts of her? Say, what about Miami?" And yeah. Look what's happening here. You know, my dad was from Brooklyn, New York, and he's a high school dropout, and he was arrested and thrown before a judge many times for drag racing his car. Several times later, the judge said to him, my dad's name's Richard, goes, "Dick, next time I see you, you're going to jail. So either join the Navy or plan on going to jail." And my dad went to the Navy. My dad used to say, you know, a great story, and I never got tired of it. He goes, "Doug, I was a punk growing up, and I joined the Navy, and it changed my life." But one of my dad's favorite sayings was, "Talk is cheap." And so as I'm standing on a stage with the other candidates here, and I hear these empty words, "As governor, I will, I shall, I promise, I pledge." And I'm like thinking, the past 2 years have really sucked for Pennsylvania, sucked for me as well. Where have you been and what have you done? Because talk is cheap. And I said, you know, as a man of action, you know, in the Army, you don't make it to colonel without delivering results. And you have to work as a team member, but you have to be, you know, the best you can be without stabbing folks in the back. I know people get away with that as captain, lieutenants, but when you get to the higher ranks there, you do have to forge a team and keep the team going for the mission, the common goal. And when they weren't there when we need them, Chris, they're not going to be there when we don't. It's not proven, demonstrated leadership. We sure can. You know, some people say, "Well, Doug, you know, I was not in politics when this happened." Well, neither was the founder of Free PA, you know, Tabitha Below and Mike Altlin. Neither was the founder of Reopen PA, you know, Matt Bellis. These people got tired of their senators and reps not doing anything, and they did something. I sure could have used help on the steps. These millions of dollars are being thrown in these races. We could use some of that money to help, you know, buy the porta pots and all that we had to provide, you know, for the rallies. It was really hard for common folks like us to scrounge up money, you know, going out, "Hey, could you donate $100, you know, kind of thing. So talk is cheap. They didn't do anything then. They're not going to do anything now.
I will shut up after one more question. I didn't keep to my promise that I was going to turn this over to people, but I promise I will. The last question is, given how rancorous your relationship is with some of the fellow Republicans who would presumably continue to lead in Harrisburg in the legislature, if you're Governor Mastriano, this smacks of Donald Trump's tenure in the White House when he had Republicans that would buck him. Do you think you have the ability to lead a coalition of Republicans who seem like they just don't like you very much?
So there's only really one Republican that's in the Senate, and I'm surprised you haven't caught on this here, because this is really huge news. So you'll notice that Jake Corman no longer has a district. He has no Senate district. my colleagues in the Senate, when they read through the maps, you know, with the commission, but they had heavy influence in the Senate on what our maps looked like. I mean, I got what I wanted. I asked for, you know, certain map, and I got almost exactly what I asked for from my colleagues that supposedly, you know, I can't work with. My colleagues were so, many of them were so taken aback by Jake's behavior and you know, his lack of good leadership and able to work with all the Senate and acting unilaterally against me. They had no say in this here, that my colleagues drew him out of the Senate district. And never before, in history, Chris, if I'm wrong, please tell me, when was a president pro tem drawn out of the map? Usually he can pick his map. He had a map pick where he's going to push out one of my colleagues. And they're like, oh, no, you're not. And they showed him the map in November. And that's why he came out before we released the maps. Governor or bust, because he had nothing. So.
Wow. I don't know. You're right. I didn't know that. So do you have other colleagues that have come out and endorsed you already for this race or no?
Oh, I have a whole stack of colleagues.
All right. Yeah. Well, then we'll drop it at that for now. Turning it back to questions, because I know tons of people have questions. And so I don't want to dismiss all the important questions that are coming through. Like Lisa's, what if you end all mandates, but Philadelphia decides to continue to have one for the city? Are you interested in going to war with Philadelphia if it comes to that on things like mandates, shop mandates, mask mandates, and other things like DeSantis has, or school law, criminal activity? I mean, there's been talk about recalling Larry Krasner. Philadelphia is a problem for a constitutional conservative. There's no doubt.
And Krasner was reelected like 5 months ago with 70% of the vote, if I'm not mistaken here. It's like, guys, did you see what he's doing to the city? 500 plus murders a year. I mean, it's more dangerous than Kabul, Afghanistan was when I was stationed there three times. I am willing to take on Philadelphia when they intrude upon people's constitutional rights. So, yes, I do view these mandates as violations of people's constitutional rights. I do view masking kids and forcing a jab for a job as a severe violation of constitutional freedoms. So when the city decides to trample on people's individual freedoms, yes, I will be like Ron DeSantis here and take them on, because there's nothing more serious. I mean, I've served with people overseas that didn't come home fighting for these very freedoms that so flippantly these liberal mayors or governors, in our case here in Tom Wolf here, willy-nilly acting like they're the kings, that they can do this. I thought it says in our Declaration of Independence that we have certain inalienable rights. You know, these are God-given rights. And so how dare any representative or governor or mayor think they can come in and trample on people's freedom? So, yes, I will step in that case.
We sort of talked about this. Linda wants to know, address the need for curriculum transparency. What's your plan to eliminate CRT, sex exploration, gender confusion influences? This is kind of in the vein of a DeSantis question. Do you see doing something similar, a ban like he implemented in Florida?
I love it. And on day one, CRT is banned. Day one, transparency in curriculum. Hopefully, now I voted for him. I think it's Andrew Lewis's bill. We did pass that in the Senate. In the Senate Education Committee, all it needs to do is go forward then to the governor. If the governor doesn't sign that in the law, I could do an executive order on transparency and then back it. We want to always back it up, though, with legislation, because otherwise, if you don't have legislation, you get a governor like me or DeSantis coming in and they roll back all these edicts from the Democrats. And so I do have to work with the General Assembly and making all this codified into law.
Raylene, you kind of tackled this, plans regarding property taxes.
Yes. So there's several approaches, and I alluded to both of them in brief. A Senate bill, House Bill 76, the 76ers, was to end property taxes at the local level and shift to Harrisburg, where the money would be collected for property taxes. The funds that would be lost would be found in a form of a income tax and a sales tax, which for me, I wish we wouldn't shift the tax around. So my goal is to take on school education with school choice and seeing how much I'd have to work, of course, with my friend in the Treasury, Stacey Garrity, who's fantastic, our treasurer, to see how much we could bring it down with these scholarships here and bring competition to schools. I think it'll bring down property taxes significantly, but in the end, we have to get rid of it because it's killing people.
Adam wants to know, when you were leading the charge for Trump on the 2020 election, did you ever hear from Lou Barletta or Dave White? I'm hearing a lot about them now.
Not a peep out of anyone running for office. Not a peep. You know, take Jake Corman out, and we know where he stands. He was standing as an impediment to actually to investigating 2020. He did that one nice letter, but after that, he kind of faded away. We can talk about what's happened since.
Donald Trump, very specifically on this point, he has not weighed in on it yet, as we talk tonight, with the exception of one. He very specifically issued a press release last week blasting away at Bill McSwain, the former not district attorney, darn it, U.S. attorney in the southeastern portion of Pennsylvania, blasted him, said he didn't do enough. And McSwain has said, well, look, that was at the order of my boss, the attorney general. And Trump said, should have done it anyway. So is that a fair criticism? You said you didn't hear from anybody. McSwain said I couldn't. So sorry to interrupt. I just wanted to inject that.
What a bunch of I agree with Donald Trump. And I was surprised that came out because you know, we're on the stage with Bill, and he's making, you know, claiming all this and that. You know, I stopped all the looting in Philly, and I did this and that. And like, dude, you're overplaying your hand. There's no way one man can do all that. So I hold the hearing. Okay, Election Day happens November 3rd, 2020. I'm hearing from, and this is no exaggeration, from thousands of people from across the state, because I had this statewide reach because of the, you know, leading the reopen movement and the freedom movement and what have you. Doug, this happened to me. Do something. I'm imagining, Chris, you know, my naivety that these guys that have been like Jake, that have been in there for, you know, several decades, were going to do something. They did nothing. So without asking permission from Jake, because I knew he'd say no, I held a committee meeting with Senator Argel, and it blew the lid off of, you know, wow, we got a lot of problems in Pennsylvania. That was the first step, and it's not done yet. Could you imagine had 2 weeks later or a week later, Bill McSwain, you know, with his power as a U.S. attorney, saying, you know what, we have ample evidence here. It's time to move forward. And, you know, what a cowardly thing. You know, oh, Bill Barr told me not to move forward. You know, Jake Corman told me not to move forward. Now, it came with a cost for me. You know, I moved forward, you know, without his blessing. And, of course, he stripped me of my committee chair and, you know, reassigned my staff. I actually fired my chief of staff, who was a retired chief warrant officer, United States Army combat veteran. I served with him in Iraq 31 years ago. That's how they treat veterans, by the way. And so had Bill McSwain done that, he would have been a hero. He would have had the golden ticket to governor. But when we needed him, he left me holding the bag. And I agree with Donald Trump.
Why did he strip you of that that investigative power you had over that election? Why did he do that, do you think?
I was forcing action as a committee chair. You know, I had many conversations with Jake and, you know, and many with Donald Trump as well. And I said, Jake, so I'm a committee chair. Can you stop me from, you know, issuing subpoenas, you know, assuming I get a vote in affirmative from my colleagues in the committee? He goes, like, Doug, I can't stop you, but I strongly urge you not to. And so the next day after he strongly urged me not to, that'd be the same thing Bill Barr saying, don't do anything kind of thing. I issued letters announcing the three counties, York County, Cayuga County, and Philadelphia County, that I had intended in 3 weeks to issue subpoenas, and I want them to comply with a forensic investigation. And he no longer wanted to talk to me. So then I worked with NATO for 4 years. I had to work with the French and the Belgians. I had a great relationship with these multinational partners. It was hard to get things done in 18 nations working for me. It was very hard to pull a coalition of allies and what have you together, but I did it. And I was told it was the best leadership they saw, you know, in Afghanistan for that level, you know, in that snapshot of time. I imagine, Chris, that as somebody so experienced in leading, you know, combined teams, that I can get it done. But the problem is, if somebody lacks integrity and cares about the truth, you're not going to get anything done. And so I had lots of conversations with Jake in good faith with my staff and his and me as well as directly with him. And anytime he had a concern, we'd stop and address it. We got to the point that I realized things weren't going in the right direction. For instance, I had a vote planned for the committee, I think, on the 6th of August. More than 3 weeks has gone by. An extra week beyond, I had hope because Jake had some concerns. We addressed those numerous times. I had a vote lined up to issue the subpoenas. It has to be an in-person vote. And behind my back, Jake called all the Republican committee members and told them not to show up. And so I'm trying to contact him. He's sending me texts. I'm mad at you. I'm like, he seriously, you're the president pro tem of the Senate, and you're not going to say, Doug, you know, this is why I'm doing this, other than come to find out he had ambitions to run for governor, and this was going to be his ticket to going forward, I believe. And so it was sabotage.
So it isn't, I know you don't want to give him much of anything, but this is important to me that I at least understand this. Is it, he would like the credit for investigating the fraud of 2020, but it isn't that he doesn't believe there was fraud, right? I mean, will you give him at least that he does believe there was fraud? Or because some people believe that Republicans are every bit as in on it, Doug. That's what I hear all the time, that Act 77 was all part of a cabal, that they're all one and the same, Democrats, Republicans, they're all part and parcel of the same deal. Republicans don't really care, and they don't want the fraud to be uncovered. That's what I hear all the time. So what would you say to that, besides yourself?
I don't know. You'll have to ask him when he comes on for his interview here. It's very baffling to me. You know, for me and the people of the state, we don't care who does a forensic investigation, but just do the stupid investigation. If we're wrong, we're wrong. And if we're right, that's fantastic. Let's get it right. You know, why haven't the ballots been subpoenaed? The ballots are going to be destroyed in September. They have a 22-month shelf life. The forensic investigation begins and ends, really. Equipment, yes, but that's secondary. And there's a debate constitutionally whether we can mess with the equipment, you know, at the committee level. But I do know, as a committee chair, I had authority of the ballots, and that was going to be the first thing I was going to subpoena was the ballots. We're going to do it forensically, like Arizona, and then if there's nothing to see here, you know what? The election wasn't that bad. Guess what? But we did our oversight. But I do believe if it happens, and I don't think it's going to happen, we're going to be shocked.
Can you, in two sentences, boil down, in its essence, what you think happened in election 2020? Just final answer. I, Doug Mastriano, think in 2020, Joe Biden won Pennsylvania this way. How did he do it? Was it too complicated?
This is hard. You know, when people ask about Act 77, I want to give the facts. And it's like, it doesn't sink in, you know, facts. Yeah. Tom Wolf did this. Fact, Supreme Court did this. Fact, the Secretary of State did this. It's just not so simple. All I do know is we must do a forensic investigation of ballots, because
you mentioned physical copies, and that particular thing, when you say physical copies of ballots, meaning double counting votes, counting Chris Stegall copied twice, is that what that means?
This means having three counters at each table on a carousel, doing a physical recount, and then each ballot going to a machine to be analyzed forensically with magnifying glass to see if it's hand filled in or machine filled in. And I saw that, you know, in person last June in Phoenix, Arizona. I believe there was significant fraud in the 2020 election here, and we need to get to the bottom of it because people are lacking faith in the integrity of our election.
But you're not to define fraud specifically. You think it's instances of double counting ballots, for instance, not exclusively. I know there were multiple things, the Zuckerberg bucks, just turning votes out, sheer volume of votes. Is it a volume issue, or is it manufactured votes? That's a difference to me, with a distinction, I think.
It's a darn shame we don't know. I believe it's both. I believe, okay, I think it's Lehigh County DA, I believe it's him, said there's 288 instances of people delivering more than one ballot to a ballot box, which is a violation of law. Tom Wolf himself violated law when he asked his wife to deliver the ballot. That he doesn't, and it, he, free pass, you know, if I did that, the Inquirer would be knocking on my door.
Right. All right. Yeah, I'm intrigued forever if it's a volume issue, or because there are some people that are convinced physical ballots were created out of thin air versus where I lean at this moment, Doug, which is it's a volume game. Not that they were legitimately cast ballots, but they were ballots with legitimate names nonetheless that were cast in a heavy, heavy volume. I tend to lean that direction more than I feel like we can substantially prove manufacturing air ballots, if that makes sense.
I sure would like to get the bottom of it here. I kind of scratch my pocket and I say, how did Josh Shapiro get more votes than Joe Biden?
Yeah. the Liquor Control Board, Shelley wants to know, can you put the Liquor Control Board out of business, Senator Mastriano?
Well, you know, standing with the constituents over the past 2 years here, there's some groups that really show that they have too much power. And LCB, some of the agents were fantastic, because I go around the state and I, you know, how did it go with your local agent? How did they treat you? Some of the agents, you know, would just say, hey, you know what, here's Wolf's, you know, mandates. Hey, just be careful about it. And they'd leave. Others came down, you know, threatening to strip restaurants of their liquor license, which would destroy their business here, you know, throwing their weight around. We saw that in several instances here. And so, you know, in the end, they have to be defanged. They have way too much power here. And many of the bureaucrats, such as the health department here, have shown themselves to be, you know, way over strength in regulations. There's 153,000. This is how we deal with this now. somebody can come on a program and say, yes, I'm going to rein in the power of, you know, DEP and LCB. How do you do this here? There's 153,000 state regulations on the book. All those regulations are used to control you, your lives, and your businesses. And so when DEP, Department of Environmental Protection, comes down and says, you have to pay, you know, a rain tax, and here's a tax you have to pay, it's based off all these regulations here. That's the real culprit here. That's the thing that gives LCB and DEP and pick an agency the power. So my goal is, I did say the first year, I think in the first 100 days, my goal is to get underneath 100,000 regulations. That's going to save people, you know, millions of dollars across the state. It's going to reopen. It's going to be fantastic. We'll open the state up here for business. You think about this here. And then I'll do the Donald Trump thing, which actually we have legislation. For every new legislation, two have to go away. So we have to deregulate the state as much. DEP, Department of Environmental Protection, reviews and approves 46,000 licenses a year. And so you file your license to develop your land, to put a shed on it, you know, in the back for your business for the lawn equipment, for instance. This happened in a business locally here in my district. DEP sits on it for months on end. Sometimes it'll take a year. They finally approve it. They come down. You have to do a mosquito pit for, you know, for the MS4 rain tax, and you have to do this and that. And one owner said, Doug, this cost me twice the amount of money because not only the time wasted, I'm not even accounted for, but the actual work they forced me to do here. So we have, that's how we get our state back, you know, to make it open for business. It's not just, you know, cutting a tax here or there. It's actually defanging the regulators. The governor of the state, I'll have 80,000 people working for me. Those bureaucrats have to understand that they work for the people and not for the bureaucracy. And I think many of them have proven during the shutdown that they view it the other way around.
Karen says, "How you've given us an hour. You're generous with your time. So I don't want to keep you much longer, but I gobbled up a lot of this time, and I'm sorry. I just had a lot on my mind. How will you bring the energy supply back to Pennsylvania?" Karen wants to know.
Thank you. And what a great question to end on, too, because you're right. You started off the program, you know, from talking about from your friend here that we're sitting on a gold mine. Why can't we get a check every year like Alaska here? The benefit being an energy producer, everyone in the state of Pennsylvania should benefit from the coal reserves that we have here, for the natural gas we have, and even oil. Oil City. Pennsylvania's been a producer of oil going back to the 1800s here. The way we unleash the potential of energy in Pennsylvania, and it's a multi-pronged approach here. You know, first, of course, is looking at some of Tom Wolf's fees and pulling those fees off the backs of the companies, because that's driving them out. And then additionally, driving away many of these regulations. I actually have a bill in the Senate here that identifies specific regulation that fees to go after. If we reduce the burden of regulations and fees, it will make it more beneficial for companies to stay here rather than going to West Virginia or Ohio. And so I want us to be, you know, the central location of energy on the East Coast, or even for the nation. I want us to be the beacon here that produces energy and provides it to New England. In 2018, to show you how mad some of these Democrat states have gone, they have these extreme green policies, not based off of facts, but off, you know, pop science. And they aren't allowing pipelines coming from Pennsylvania to Massachusetts, for instance. You know, New York won't let them. New Jersey won't let them. And so there's a remember, 2018 was a terrible winter. It was terrible. We had snowstorms. It was freezing cold. And Boston, Massachusetts was running out of energy, and they actually paid for two Russian ships to come 4,500 miles away from Siberia to supply natural gas, billions of dollars worth of natural gas, to Boston, Massachusetts, which in turn helped fund Vladimir Putin's army, enabled him to modernize his army, and indirectly, of course, it helped him wage this war now in Ukraine some years later. Pennsylvania, we need to have an LNG terminal off of Philadelphia, a modern one off of Philadelphia and in Lake Erie here, and we need to have the capability to, and that's within the state. These pipelines will go up, and then we'll be able to deliver that energy anywhere we need to. This is good for Pennsylvania because it keeps the money in our state, and the people need to benefit from that. Additionally, it makes the world safer, because then our allies in Lithuania, and when I was in the Army, I worked quite a bit with our allies in the East. The former Minister of Defense, Roza Jukaminica, said, Doug, we've been a partner with Pennsylvania for 20-some years back then. We want to buy, we'll pay extra money to buy it off of Pennsylvania, but it's not getting there, so they're buying it off of Norway. The world will be better and safer when Pennsylvania is the energy powerhouse.
Doug Mastriano, you have been fantastic with your time tonight. How can people be helpful in this closing month of your campaign if they'd like to get in touch?
So we really are a people's movement, a grassroots movement. I know most campaigns say that, but okay, I say that because we have thousands of volunteers. Okay, but say that to get on the ballot, I needed 2,000 signatures. My people collected a record for Republican, 29,000 signatures. Even Lieutenant Governor Fetterman was so impressed, he shook my hand last week. It's done. Some of the people we talked about actually were paying $200 to $500 a sheet to get 30 signatures. Are you kidding me? And so how do you get somebody like me on the ballot? Spotlight PA looked at all our finances, and they're like, Doug, you know, he's one of the top fundraisers here, not pouring his own money in the campaign like the wealthy guys are, because I don't have a lot to pour in, but mostly small donations from across the state. How do you help out? Go to DougForGov.com, DougForGov.com, and volunteer and donate if you can. We sure do need your help.
You're welcome back on the show, sir, before primary day, and I appreciate your time tonight. Thank you, Doug Mastriano.
Thank you, Chris. Thanks for all your work. God bless.
And we will see you tomorrow morning, 6 a.m. on Philadelphia's AM 990 The Answer. Good night.
Good night.